When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Mail checks, invoices, documents, and everything you need to keep your business running. Get rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS. And with the mobile app, you can take care of mailing on the go. Make the same no-brainer decisions as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Welcome to Nobody Told Me. I'm Jan Black.
And I'm Laura Owens.
Our guest on the line, University of North Carolina clinical psychology professor Mitch Prinstein, has studied how popularity affects our success, our relationships, and our happiness.
He's written about it in the book Popular, The Power of Likeability in a Status-Obsessed World. Professor, thank you so much for joining us on the line today.
Sure, thanks for having me.
So how did you come up with the idea for Popular?
Well, actually, researchers have been studying popularity for I personally have been personally and professionally interested in this topic for just about my whole life. I'm interested in writing this book now because everyone is starting to focus on one of two different kinds of popularity, and it's not the good kind.
Well, tell us about that. You say there are two different kinds of popularity. What are they?
Well, one type of popularity is the type that we can identify when we're as young as old, and it's simply how much we like one another. Likeability is a really important part of popularity because those who are likable tend to do very well in life. Even 40 years later, they have better jobs, they get paid more, they're happier, and even physically healthier. But the kind of popularity most of us think about when we hear about the topic is the kind we experienced in high school. And that's not about likability at all, is it? It's really who's most visible and influential and attractive and powerful. And that type of popularity actually leads to long-term consequences.
Such as?
Well, the kids who are the coolest when they grow up actually end up having problems with relationships, both romantic and friendships, as well as their relationships at work. They're at greater risk for addiction, as well as depression and anxiety.
So that may be why you see the kids who were being drunk in high school end up being alcoholics later in life then, right?
Yeah, it has something to do with the experimentation when they're young, but also there's something about being popular in that way, the high status popularity in adolescence, that kind of leads people to be more interested in their reputations at the expense of developing true, genuine connections with others, and sometimes even using others as a way just to make themselves seem more visible or more powerful. And that doesn't work so well when we become adults.
You were referenced in a great article in Newsweek about how the teen experience affects your brain. Can you go into that a little bit?
Yeah, so our brains develop just around the time before we start noticing changes in our bodies related to puberty. And the changes that occur are affecting our interest in getting lots of attention from our peers. It's something psychologists refer to as the experience of social rewards. That's what makes us really excited about popularity at that age. The part of it that's a little bit scary, though, is that research suggests that access on social media can kind of muck around with that a little bit. So whereas outside of social media, we tend to experience the brain's bakes or our inhibition centers when we see things dangerous and immoral. When we see those same kinds of images online attached to indicators suggesting that they're well-liked or followed, it seems to release the brain's brakes. And suddenly, just because we see these dangerous things online that appear to be popular, it makes us perhaps a little bit more interested in them. So we're being influenced, especially teenagers, without them even realizing it.
Well, explain a little bit more about that, the kinds of things that you're talking about.
Well, researchers showed pictures of things like risky behavior or aggression towards one another, things that we would really hope that adolescents would look at and immediately have an almost instinctual response to be against those things or not want to engage in those things. And that's exactly what happens when kids look at these kinds of images offline. But when they see them online, coupled with these markers that they're popular images, it has a very different effect. It seems that the only thing that they're experiencing, at least at a neural level, is an attraction to these images because they look popular.
Interesting.
We thank you for being part of our Nobody Told Me family of listeners. Our conversation continues as we tell you more about our sponsor, Green Chef, and a special offer Green Chef has just for our listeners.
Green Chef is a CCOF certified meal kit company that makes eating well easy with plans to fit every lifestyle. Whether you're keto, paleo, vegan, vegetarian, gluten-free, or just looking to eat more balanced meals, Green Chef offers a range of recipes to suit your preferences.
Fill up with Protein Packed. That's Green Chef's newest collection of recipes fit for a high protein dietary preference. Choose from 3 weekly menu items, each including at least 40 grams of protein per serving. You can expect a variety of satisfying and flavorful recipes like Greek chicken salad with mint olive tapenade, enchilada spiced turkey bowls, and almond-crusted barramundi.
Celebrate springtime with recipes featuring premium proteins, seasonal organic produce, and sustainably sourced seafood. This month, I'm loving Green Chef's savory seared beef tenderloin with shiitake mushrooms and green beans and a spicy ginger lime aioli.
As for me, my favorite this month is Green Chef's chicken with garlic charred rice with a delicious apricot pan sauce and roasted almonds.
And Green Chef is the only meal kit that is both carbon and plastic offset. They offset 100% of their delivery emissions to your door, as well as 100% of the plastic in every box. Plus, nearly all packaging materials are curbside recyclables in most areas in the U.S.
Make time for exciting plans and new goals this spring with Green Chef's convenient, wholesome recipes featuring seasonal organic produce and unique farm-fresh ingredients like rainbow carrots, bok choy, and olives.
Plus, you'll cut down on meal prep with pre-portioned and prepped ingredients, including pre-measured sauces, spices, and dressings.
And now here's the special offer for Nobody Told Me listeners. Just go to greenchef.com/nobody60 and use code NOBODY60 to get 60% off plus free shipping.
Green Chef is the number one meal kit for eating well.
Just go to greenchef.com/nobody60 and use code NOBODY60 to get 60% off plus free shipping.
Well, going back to just the basics of popularity, when kids are in school, I'm thinking about my own experience. It seems like almost immediately, if you're starting out in a new situation, you know who's popular and who's not. And based on that, you know who you're going to be friends with and who you're not going to be friends with. And if you're into computers, you're going to be more with the nerdy crowd. And, you know, if you like drinking and being social, you're more in the popular crowd. How do these cliques form?
Well, in adolescence, cliques tend to form in the same way across different countries. And even adolescence is we first establish our sense of identity. It's when we start thinking of ourselves as permanent beings with a past, which is very different than the way that young kids think about themselves, which is more minute to minute. Well, that way of organizing our identity has a lot to do with the peers that we hang out with. So we pick peers that listen to the same music as us, and those who have the same interests in us, and those who are at the same positions in the popularity hierarchy. So our identity has kind of become forever intertwined with who we were in high school and who we hung out with at that same period.
Along the lines of what determines popularity, it strikes me that kids who are popular in one town at one school might be unpopular if they were in another town in another school.
If you're an unpopular kid and a new contact, or a new after-school group with kids they've never known before, it's only a matter of hours until they seem to become unpopular in that new group as well. And the reverse occurs for those who are the most likable. The most likable kids enter a new group and become really likable all over again.
So are they sending out some kind of vibe, some kind of subtle unconscious message to other people that makes other people attracted or not attracted to them?
Yeah, absolutely. So the thing that unpopular kids seem to do, or kids that are not very well liked, is that they come off a little bit too strong and sometimes even aggressively. And that's the number one route to becoming unpopular or disliked really, really quickly. Whereas the kids who are really accepted and everyone seems to like them, they do a really good job of hanging back and listening to others before interacting. In fact, this is why introverts can all be very well liked as well as extroverts, because they're good at listening, staying back, figuring out what the norms are of the group and how everyone's hanging out together. And then when they insert themselves into interactions, they do so in a way that doesn't disrupt anything. In fact, usually enhances things by making others feel even happier or even more included with one another. That's something that's remarkable to watch, because people who are really likable can just do this almost instinctively, but we can also learn it and emulate that if we want to become more likable ourselves.
How does popularity differ between the genders?
Well, there's not too much that's different between boys and girls, with one big exception when it comes to popularity. And that is that boys seem to be able to get high in status and also high in likability a bit more easily than girls. In fact, in adolescence, it seems that those girls who are the highest in status are pretty hated by many of their peers, especially their female peers. And that's not a great thing for girls to kind of think, to learn, or kind of think might be the way that the world works when they grow up, because it's not. But it does seem to be something interesting about adolescence for females.
And tell us more about popularity as a youngster setting us up for success as an adult.
Well, you know, research has looked at so many different factors to figure out why some kids grow up to do well and some do not. But it was research even all the way back in the 60s that found that even after controlling for kids' IQ and socioeconomic status, their mental health histories, their physical health, the factor that seemed to predict above all of those other factors was how well-liked they are with peers. And it seems that the reason why is because when you're liked by peers, even at a very early age, you're consistently invited to more parties and playdates and opportunities where you just keep on learning. You get advanced skills and more practice in everything socially. And with each of those opportunities to practice, you just become better and better, more and more well-liked, and it becomes a really powerful cycle. You can imagine that the exact same thing is happening in reverse for those who are disliked, constantly deprived of opportunities to learn, which only makes them do even more poorly with peers, which is why they seem to have, you know, difficulties when we track them 20 and 30 years later.
A fairly recent example of this is found with Donald Trump. I saw you talking about this, who wants to elevate his status so badly that he just wants to get in the news, even if it's for the wrong reasons. So why is it that high status people are often very disliked? And how did he possibly win the presidency when he's technically not that popular? People can't really relate to him.
Well, people who are high in status are most likely to attract others who feel like they are low in status, especially if they feel unfairly low in status. And if we think about the people who speak out most passionately about Donald Trump's candidacy, they talk about wanting to feel like their position in society will be elevated again. And they feel upset that they have been rendered a low position of status, you know, without feeling that they deserve it. And that certainly makes sense. It's interesting that Trump's, you know, even slogan was about status, about, you know, how to increase America's status. And he really appealed specifically in that way. The concern, as time is now showing, is that one's focus on status so fervently is a never-ending kind of pursuit. I mean, even hours after being inaugurated as the highest status person on the planet, it seems that, at least based on the content of his tweets, there was still a search for trying to demonstrate that he's powerful. He has the largest crowds. He has the highest ratings in The Apprentice compared to his replacement host, and so on and so on. Every interaction seems to really focus on how to belittle others as a way to make himself seem more powerful, which, if you think about it, is actually pretty sad and unfortunate, because it really suggests that there's no end to seeking status, and you can never really be happy. You can never be satisfied, even if you're the president of the United States.
And yet you do feel that there is a link between happiness and popularity.
Well, when it comes to the type of popularity that is based on likability, then yes. And for presidents, most presidents seem to have been able to capture both status and likability, at least before now. And for people in general, those who are high in status without likability do more poorly. There's a much higher rate of depression among CEOs and the general population. Celebrities consistently talk about how lonely and isolated that they feel. But what most folks will talk about as being the most rewarding and the thing that helps them feel the best in life is when they feel that they have true connections with others who know who they are and value them. And that's exactly what likable people are like.
You're a father, so how do you approach the topic of popularity with your kids?
Well, I really take a lead from my wife, who's particularly great at this and is one of the most likable people I have ever met, even though I'm sure I might be biased. she truly is. And, you know, what I've learned from her is how to teach our kids to really value the importance of empathy and making connections with others. Our children are still in early elementary school, but we ask them just about every day what they did that helped others feel welcome, how they thought about other kids' feelings, and what they did to make other kids feel happy and important to them. And we hope that we're sending a message to our kids that we value likability. We think it's important to be concerned about others. And we try and make sure that we're not talking very much about our own Facebook feeds or our own Twitter followers or anything that might inadvertently make them get the impression that status is something we should care about more than just as a fun, you know, amusement on the side.
Why do you think that popular kids sometimes bully other kids? I mean, if the popular kid has popularity and everybody looks up to him, why do they bully others sometimes?
Yeah, this is exactly the same as this is the exact same issue as we see with Trump now. The only way to keep one's high status is to constantly show everyone how you are somehow more powerful than them. And when bullies are asked in research studies to talk about whether they think that they're being mean, many of them will readily admit, yes, they are. And the reason why is because if they are kind to others, it breaks down the barrier that makes them higher than others. If they let everyone into their circle, it diminishes the very standing that they have. So the only way to kind of defend their turf and make sure that they are at the top of the heap and no one else is to aggressively knock everyone else down, even if that means doing hurtful, harmful, vicious things to others. It's a strategy of survival. We don't just see it in people. It's very consistent across most mammal species.
Is popularity heritable? Do you find that the popular kids who grow up to be adults and parents tend to have popular kids themselves?
Sometimes. I mean, some of the things that make people popular are passed down from generation to generation. But one of the things that I talk about in the book is all of the ways that parents can play a role in raising kids to be really likable. And the research actually shows that the parents who are most successful at that are not only those who themselves were likable, but also those parents who had a pretty tough time, because it seems that these are the ones, the moms and the dads, who really pay special attention to how to raise their kids with likability in mind. There are so many different ways that that can be passed down, but genetically, heritability, there's nothing that we know of yet other than a couple of things that are softly correlated with popularity that seems to kind of determine one's fate simply at the time of conception.
Was popularity important to our ancestors generations ago? I mean, I tend to think that they were mainly focused on fighting to survive and finding food, but was popularity an issue?
You know, popularity is the only reason why we're here as a species generations ago. there's been so much research that's looked at why our species survives rather than so many other species that roam the earth that were bigger than us and hardier and more resistant and resilient. No one would have bet on us to win, but the one thing that we had, anthropologists say, is the ability to start to communicate with one another, which instantly made us work together as a herd. And it's because of our ability to work together as a group that made us survive. We could warn one another and protect one another and feed one another. But the interesting byproduct of all that is that now our bodies, 60,000 years later, are remarkably sensitive to the very moment that we sense social exclusion. In fact, there's recent research that says that at the very minute that you think that you're getting kicked out of the herd or broken up with, there are changes in our DNA and how it's expressed that prepare us for imminent injury or death, really suggesting that we are biologically programmed to care about popularity long after we graduate high school.
You mentioned breakups just a second ago. Can you talk to us about reassurance seeking and how that can impact our relationships?
Yeah, there are a lot of things that people might do that make themselves less likable. And one of the key ones is when we're overly concerned about how much others like us. It tends to manifest through this behavior that, as you mentioned, is called reassurance seeking. It's this tendency for some people to constantly ask others whether they still are liked, whether their relationship is still okay, on good footing, or whether others think that they're a good person. And most of the time, when someone's feeling a little down or having a bad day and they ask somebody that, they get the reassurance they're asking for, and that's the end of it. So that's fine. But it seems that there are some folks who, when they hear that reassurance, they still doubt it. They think that the person telling them that everything is okay is just being nice or just trying to avoid a conflict. So they ask for more reassurance. And a cycle continues where they ask again and again, which actually ends up really annoying the person that they're asking. And so they really do withdraw, only making the reassurance seeker think that they were right all along and never realizing that this had become a self-fulfilling prophecy. This is a pretty bad trap that people find leads to a fast track of rejection and depression.
It's a never-ending cycle. I mean, these people will jump from relationship to relationship having the same problem over and over again.
Exactly, which is why it's one of the things that I wanted to say to include in the book, because it's such an incredibly damaging pattern that people get into that makes them pretty dislikable. People that tend to do well at the beginning of relationships, but it leads to a lot of breakups.
What message do you have for everyone who has at times felt anxious or just a little concerned about their level of popularity?
Well, I'd say welcome to the majority. That describes almost everyone. And, you know, if you feel like your adolescence did not help you to feel like you were the most secure teenager and experience all of the rewards of the most popular kids, then good, because we benefited from that struggle and we dodged a bullet by not being the most popular people. Those who were might have grown up experiencing difficulties, while the rest of us, as long as we had a friend or two and learned how to be likable rather than focusing on our status, we ended up doing much better in the long run. So I would say we can finally put away those insecurities and concerns that we've been carrying around with us since our teenage years and go on investing in real live offline relationships, because that's what really matters.
Right. Well, what has surprised you most about your research?
I'm surprised how much popularity continues to play a role as adults. We don't call it popularity at work. We don't think of it in the same terms, but the more that I worked on the book and the more that I read the research of my colleagues and did some studies of my own, the more surprised I was to see that the very same patterns that we all experienced in high school, they're slightly more sophisticated, but they're pretty much still happening at work and they're happening in our communities. And they even affect the way that we parent. So I feel like popularity is a topic that people don't talk about, but it actually is incredibly important to the blueprint of who we are and how we interact with people every day, all day. And I hope that people recognize that it's something worth talking about because it can really make a difference.
What worries you about popularity in this age of social media? You talked about Facebook and some of the things online that people tend to use to measure their popularity with.
Yeah, I'm pretty petrified that social media has made our kids, and frankly, us as adults, really focused on status. Social media can be used to help us develop friendships and become more likable, but let's face it, that's not what they're really designed for. You know, just logging in, you're immediately presented with icons and notifications to tell you how much status you had since your last login, how many people liked you or friended you or followed you or retweeted you. These are all markers of status. And when I have been looking around with this idea in mind and while writing the book, at the number of messages that are being sent in magazines, on TV, that are pretty much telling children that their value in life as a human being can be measured by the number of their followers. And they're encouraging folks to focus on how to get more attention to their profiles, sometimes by explicitly telling people to post things they don't even believe in, if it will simply get them one more follower. That to me feels like a major shift from the society that we were just 30, 40 years ago, and one that we know is not going to lead to any good.
You know, it's interesting how social media has become a game changer in popularity, because I'm thinking about how you have kids who wouldn't necessarily be popular in school if you were to see them in person, but they can use all these filters and edit themselves, and they can get thousands and thousands of followers online. Isn't that really different than the past?
Yeah, very different. And in some ways, social media can be good. It actually can teach kids some skills. And for those kids who are extremely unpopular at school, they can develop a nice friendship group and find others with similar interests, especially if they feel really singled out. You know, just by finding similar profiles online. So social media can be a good thing. I just don't know if that's the way that most teens or adults are using it. It seems that it's a little bit focusing on shallow, superficial kinds of relationships. And interestingly, the more that people seem to be online and the more these social media profiles have proliferated, the more that people are reporting, they feel more isolated and more lonely and ultimately far less happy. So I think that there are some warning signs very clearly in front of us about the dangers of excessive use of social media. I just hope that people start paying attention to them and moderating their behavior.
Our program is called Nobody Told Me, and we always like to ask our guests, what's their Nobody Told Me lesson? What is it that nobody had told you before you went into researching popularity?
Nobody told me that that how popular you were at when you were in adolescence would make a difference in the rest of your life. But if they had, and if they had told me that that the kind of popularity I so desperately wanted when I was a teenager would ultimately not matter, I think that I might have saved myself a lot of worrying as a teenager.
Right. And you could have enjoyed your adolescence a lot more, I'm sure.
Maybe so. Maybe all of us.
Well, Mitch, how can people find you online and how can people buy your book?
Sure. Well, the book is available at all major outlets online and in major bookstores, of course. And my website is mitchprinstein.com. I'm a faculty member at UNC Chapel Hill, and people can find me there as well.
Well, you've been listening to Mitch Prinstein. He's the author of Popular, The Power of Likeability in a Status-Obsessed World. It's been such a pleasure to talk to you, and we have so many more questions that we would love to ask you, so we hope you will come back in the future and talk to us more.
Thanks so much. I'd love to.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Nobody Told Me. I'm Laura Owens.
And I'm Jan Black. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.